Bhagavatam class and the very auspicious, wonderful festival, Govardhan Puja. We'll be continuing with the standard program of Bhagavatam verse. We're still in the ninth canto, chapter 14. Today is text 37. Striyo hi akura akaruna krura Durmarsa priyasahasaha Gnantyal parte pivishrabtam Patim brataram apyuta Striyo hi akaruna krura Durmarsha priyasahasaha Gnantyal parti pivishrabdham Patim brataramaputa Striyohiya karuna krura Durmarsha priyasahasaha Gnantyal parti pivishrabdham Patim brataramaputa. Striya, women, he, indeed, akaruna, merciless, krura, cunning, durmarsha, intolerant, priya, sahasha, for their own pleasure, they can do anything. Tenanti, they kill. Alpa arte, for a slight reason. Api, indeed. Vishrabdham, faithful. Patim, husband. Brataram, brother. Api, also. Uta, it is said. Read translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is Urvasi, a heavenly inhabitant speaking. So that will be helpful to know that this verse is spoken by someone in a female body. Translation. Women as a class are merciless and cunning. They cannot tolerate even a slight offense. For their own pleasure, they can do anything irreligious, and therefore they do not fear killing even a faithful husband or brother. Purport. King Purarava was greatly attached to Urvasi, yet despite his faithfulness to her, she had left him. Now, considering that the king was wasting his rarely achieved human form of life, Urvasi frankly explained the nature of a woman. Because of her nature, a woman can respond to even a slight offense from her husband by not only leaving him, but even killing him if required. To say nothing of her husband, she can even kill her brother. That is a woman's nature. Therefore, in the material world, unless women are trained to be chaste and faithful to their husbands, there cannot be peace or prosperity in society. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschati Deshtarine. Hare Krishna, everyone. So it's an interesting verse we have here for a festival day. But everything in the Bhagavatam has a very important purpose. And the Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samhitam Uttama Shloka Charitam Chakara Bhagavan Rishihi Nishreyasya Silokasya Danyasastayana Mahat. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God. It was compiled by the sage Vyasadev, the incarnation of God. And it is meant for the all good of all people. It is all blissful, all good, and all perfect. So lessons throughout the Bhagavatam purify us, and they inoculate us against material involvement, material enjoyment, which is the root cause of being separated from Krishna. Today we have the beautiful Govardhan puja, sacrifice, yajna festival, which teaches us the position of harmony of the jiva, of the living entity, in that close relationship with Krishna, the loving exchange that is there. But on the other side, we have experience and we have the material realm, which shows us the fate of those who have turned away from Krishna. So this particular section here is teaching us about the fate when the living entity turns away from that original divine spiritual harmony with the Lord in the spiritual kingdom and has to undergo such unnecessary and burdensome sojourn through material nature, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a woman, sometimes as a fish, sometimes as an insect. All these unnecessary, repetitious births, actually, which are foreign to the pure spirit soul. So just to trace back a little bit, we can see kind of the context of this verse. We know that Purarava was captured by Urvasi, a very heavenly damsel. She's an apsara, I think the leader of the apsaras. And I'm not sure how far. Okay, so he had already enjoyed very extensively with Urvasi, and she had left him. And now he happened to be seeking so much suffering because she had left him. Yes, she had a deal that anyone who took the lambs. This was a condition in order for her to come down from the heavenly planets and enjoy with him. And he broke those conditions. He went out in the night to try to take the lambs, and she had mentioned if you ever see, if she's ever seen naked, she'll leave. So he became extremely disturbed, lamenting. He traveled around like a madman. Once during his travels, he saw her accompanied by her companions, and he spoke to her these sweet words, revealing his intense agony, actually. And he's saying, without you, my body is useless to just be eaten by foxes and vultures. So this is giving us so much instruction in terms of the nature of the material attraction and ultimately the suffering that accompanies anything, attachments in this material world. In the beginning, they seem like nectar, but they're always ending in a unsatisfactory and often extremely miserable situation. And so here, Urvasi is somewhat chastising the king, and she's saying, you are... don't allow your senses to overcome you. This is not proper dealing. That don't fall into the trap of sense attraction, sex attraction. The human being has higher duties to perform. So it's such a actually incredible pastime. I'm not quite sure who is giving some of the previous discussions. But we can learn so much, actually, how this is one of the most binding factors in the material world. It keeps us here, actually, life after life. Prabhupada would continually emphasize that point. And when we hear it from the Bhagavatam, it allows us to take a deeper look, actually, how intricate and how deep that actually can go. That a great king, actually, a great leader, a great follower of Dharma, he becomes brought down to the level of a very... minuscule position. The Bhagavatam for this says like a dancing dog. When one becomes captured, they lose their sense of discrimination, their higher purpose. So that is the danger of having uncontrolled senses. And this is one of the primary introductory preliminary points before one can really take to higher levels of spiritual life, is to control the mind and the senses. And it begins generally with the eyes. The eyes have the tendency to stray towards objects of satisfaction. But the Bhagavatam describes that each of the senses, they, for each of the, many of the animals, they have one sense which is especially powerful. In the human being, actually, all the senses are very powerful. So if one does not learn or endeavor, actually, make a positive endeavor throughout their life to learn to control those urges of the senses, then we find that one's life is brought into inauspiciousness. We can never attain Krishna consciousness unless we learn how to very carefully and willfully control the senses. If we're not making that conscious effort, then the senses are controlling us. It's either one of the two. Either we're endeavoring, and by Krishna's mercy, getting some grasp, ability to control the senses, or we're under their grip. Extremely powerful forces in this material world. Today's verse is seems very harsh also. It seems very strong. Urvasi is mentioning the nature of women. We understand that the material realm, actually, anyone's position without devotional service is inauspicious. Whether it be a man, a woman, or an animal, without devotion to Krishna, without Krishna bhakti, then there cannot be any auspiciousness. It's also important to note that these type of statements refer to materialistic women, those who have not taken to Krishna consciousness. Anyone who comes to the devotional platform immediately becomes a sadhu or sadvi, and so they are beyond the material conditionings born of their nature. Materialistic men, materialistic women, they're both not in a good place. Once one takes to the process of devotional service, however, then immediately divine qualities begin to manifest. And we see that in the beautiful pastime of a Govardhan, the pure state of the living entity, where all the divine qualities are visible and being manifest and actually play an important role in the continuing unfolding of the wondrous and most ecstatic pastimes. So we might talk a little bit about this Govardhan Puja, Govardhan pastime today. I'm sure in the evening it will be more elaborately discussed. But Govardhan Hill has many, many important aspects of significance. Govardhan Hill is the sacred mountain, actually, in the Vedic understanding. We understand that even mountains, it's a jiva who is in a particular, you'd see like crystals grow. So also mountains can change over time like that. And Govardhan Hill, Giriraj, is actually an incarnation of Krishna himself in the form of a mountain. Therefore, he is the best of mountains. And there's many great, the Himalayas like this are also considered a great mountain. But Giriraj appeared in this world in a very unique way. And he serves such an important purpose in the land of Vrindavan. In the land of Vrindavan, Haridas Varya Krishna is considered, Govardhan Hill is considered the greatest servant, actually. This is revealed in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the gopis are praying that actually Govardhan Hill, who's the best servant of Krishna? It's this Govardhan Hill, because he's providing Krishna. He knows how to please the Lord by pleasing the Lord's devotees. Therefore, he is the greatest servant. He provides the grass for the cows. He provides cooling lakes, rivers, and waterfalls for the Lord's most intimate devotees, the cowherd boys, to cool off, and trees, caves, like that. We're hearing the position of Krishna in the form of a servant, just as we see Baladeva is Krishna himself in the role of a servant. So also Giriraj, he is Krishna himself in the role of a servant. So we can hear a little bit. I'll read one beautiful prayer. It's called the Govardhanastakam, which describes the glories of Govardhan Hill. Obviously very appropriate for today. And Govardhan is so merciful that today is a great opportunity we endeavor to actually develop a relationship with Giriraj. Giriraj, such a beautiful, ecstatic form of the Lord, actually. Those who've been to Vrindavan, they know there's nothing like going on Govardhan Parikram. My Guru Maharaj says that when he thinks of Vrindavan, he thinks of Govardhan Hill. So this is a nice prayer. It was composed by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And we'll kind of just understand and appreciate the mood of an advanced devotee in relationship to Giriraj. May Govardhan Hill, which by Krishna's mercy became the king of all mountains and received the respectful tribute of its arch enemy Indra, fulfill my desire. As it was held above the earth, it became so filled with happiness by experiencing the softness of its beloved Krishna's lotus hand, it did not even know it was being struck by Indra's thunderbolt. May Govardhan Hill fulfill my desire. Trying to collect a toll, Krishna quarreled there with King Vrishabhanu's daughter. The personified Vedas yearned to list that quarrel. May Govardhan Hill fulfill my desire. Bathing in a nearby lake, the elephant of a pleasant breeze covered with pollen of kadamba and other flowers gracefully plays there. May Govardhan Hill fulfill my desire. Does the sweet fragrance of Govardhan come from the musk deer who relax there, from the Lord who plays there, or is it Govardhan's own natural scent? May Govardhan Hill fulfill my desire. Searching there for Lord Hari on the path of his flute music, the astonished deer do not find him. May Govardhan Hill fulfill my desire. As the divine couple traveled on the Ganges there, the boat began to sink in the middle. Krishna was splendidly handsome as Radha clung to his neck. May Govardhan Hill fulfill my desire. Without taking shelter of the feet of the hill that is the best of Lord Hari's servants and full of love for the divine king and queen, how is it possible to attain pure devotional service? May Govardhan Hill fulfill my desire. Then there's a Palashruti. May the reader of these 8 verses glorifying Lord Hari's greatest servant, his heart melting with pure love, quickly attain direct service to the lotus feet of Sri Radha Madhava. So Govardhan Hill is the place of, it's the residence. It's the most beautiful. Generally, in the material world, we try to imagine some place that will be very wonderful, right? Either very romantic or very comfortable. But in the spiritual world, the highest, the actual original feature of residence or of enjoyment is Govardhan Hill. All of the pastimes generally, Krishna goes out in the forest, and there's so many places on Govardhan Hill where the Lord and also Krishna and the gopis, they enjoy so many variegated pastimes. There's beautiful caves filled with jewels, lush forests, grasses, crystal lakes, flowing waterfalls. When we read about Vrindavan, the idea is that it actually creates a type of meditation, and therefore it awakens an attraction. Actual desire at some point has to manifest that I don't want to be in this material world. I don't want to have to go through the perverted reflection of reality. We're hearing here, this is the perverted sphere where all of the original divine qualities, the original kama of the soul, the raga of the soul, is for actual pure love of Krishna. When that gets perverted, then in the material world, it takes the exact opposite form, and it turns into lust. And lust, from lust comes anger, greed, so many wicked, evil things in this world. This is the comparison that we're hearing today, actually. When the soul is not finding shelter, finding satisfaction, turning back his attention towards Krishna, then the soul has no other refuge but to take shelter of material satisfaction or material gain, which means trying to put myself first, trying to enjoy as an imitation God. That is the cause of the negative qualities that are mentioned here. Merciless, devoid of mercy. Mercy can only come when one is connected to the most merciful, Krishna. So these are actually demoniac qualities. And the demoniac and divine qualities, they exist simply depending on the soul's orientation towards Krishna. The dvesha, the hatred, comes. The soul becomes envious that why should Krishna be God? So this Govardhan pastime, it also teaches us what is the position of God. I was reading recently that one of the distinctions between the Kanishta and the Madhyama Adhikari is that a Madhyama, he's completely rooted out any traces of Mayavad philosophy. So here we're hearing the real position of God, Krishna. He can very easily lift a mountain, this pinky finger. What can we do? But still, there is a very, very far-fetched and bogus idea that is in the subtle body and the false ego, that I should be God, I can be God. So this is a very humbling when we reflect that Krishna is here lifting a whole mountain for 7 days. That humility, actually, that honesty, this is real self-honesty, to come to terms with our position, that what am I? And what am I in relation to God? I am, Prabhupada says, simply insignificant. That is actually a very pacifying and liberating realization. The false ego wants to convince us I'm something great. Everyone should worship and adore me. I should be in the center. I should lift Govardhan Hill. But a pure devotee, he's completely averse to even that concept. That has a bad odor, that type of consciousness. It's a contaminated and offensive. Right? That's what keeps us here in the material world. So coming to a position of genuine humility, this Leela teaches us. And that is important to meditate and reflect on and actually weed out this illusion that keeps trying to tell us that how great we are, how important we are, all these different things. There's just a few more points we can examine in this Leela. I don't know if we should go through the whole thing. I'm sure this evening it will be further explained. But basically, Krishna in Vrindavan, he saw that his family, his devotees, were giving their worship to Indra. And specifically, he noticed that Indra had become proud. We know that Krishna does not tolerate pride, even an iota of pride, in his devotee. We all have experience. We may be doing some nice devotional activity, but as soon as pride comes, the productivity devotionally and externally of whatever we're doing is immediately compromised. Immediately, it's said that Krishna changes his attitude whenever Krishna sees pride. So even we may have some very small service, but if pride, and what is pride? Pride is actually, it's a comparative emotion. It compares ourselves to others. It puts others down and puts us up. So Krishna doesn't appreciate that. Krishna doesn't like that. This is part of the nature of Krishna. He's a person. He has likes and dislikes. So he doesn't like to see when one devotee becomes especially proud of his service and thereby denigrates the service of others. He doesn't tolerate that. So then immediately he changes his attitude towards the devotee. Immediately then I don't get the same kind of experience in my service. And also then Krishna shows us, what is our service? Our service is only dependent on him, actually. He's the only doer. And we're sometimes forced to learn the hard way that without Krishna's mercy, all of my attempts are failures, actually. And Krishna has to show us that. We have to always, a devotee has to conscientiously always remain humble. He knows that any good that he's doing, Krishna's hand is behind it. On my own, what can I do? That is important in the beginning, the middle, and the higher stages of bhakti throughout. Again, the false ego continuously is whispering in our ear, you did great, you're the doer, look at all you've done. Look, they're not doing anything, they're still struggling. That is the dictation of Maya. The devotee, though, he has to conscientiously guard himself against that, with his intelligence, his mind, associating with devotees who are free from pride. By that, he will also root out that gross impurity. So, he saw that Indra had developed pride. Now, Indra is a very great, actually, personality within the material world. He's the king of heaven. So what are we? We're not even a king. What to speak of the king of heaven? We're not even such a high or important person, right? We're a Kali Yuga, very insignificant, very fallen. We can hardly, you know, get our act together on a day-to-day basis. So what to speak of having, you know, problems ourselves? So Indra is very, very exalted. He's the king of all of the demigods. So we get proud even though we're kind of stumbling along. Indra, imagine the opportunity that comes in a position like Indra. So much opulence, so much power, so much enjoyment. So many people willing to respond to his every whim or desire. So Indra became, Krishna saw that Indra had become proud. He'd become proud of his position. And to see that his most beloved devotees, actually, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, the devotees for whom Krishna are more dear to Krishna than his life, the devotees for whom Krishna exists to reciprocate with their love, they were directing their attention and their worship to Indra. Krishna could not tolerate that. It was painful. And out of mercy, he wanted to correct Indra and bring him back to his senses. Because pride is considered an intoxicant. So we've taken a vow, no intoxication. But that also, on a higher sense, refers to we get intoxicated by ego. So Krishna couldn't tolerate this pride in the heart of his devotee, and that in Vrindavan, his dearmost devotees were directing their focus and attention that way. So he devised this beautiful plan, actually, how to do many things. Whenever Krishna does something, he does many things at once. So he simultaneously humbles Indra in a very profound way. And he teaches the Brajavasis and all of us that actually our worship should only go to Krishna. We don't need to worship anyone else. And that is easy to grasp intellectually, but very practically it's not so easy, actually. We still put our faith in so many different things, actually. Krishna is there continually beckoning us within our heart to turn towards him, and that we can find everything we need under the shelter of Krishna, under the shelter of Giriraj, Krishna himself. But due to conditioning, our senses and our attention is continually geared externally outward. We're continually looking for something. No, Krishna can't do that. Krishna, I have to go somewhere else. I have to be practical. I have to take the matter into my own hands. But Krishna wants to put the devotee in the most dependent position, that in any circumstance, I depend on Krishna. That is a position of Sharanagati. To accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable, accept Krishna as one's maintainer. Only Krishna can actually maintain me. Only Krishna is my real protector. And to fully surrender and be humble. These are very deep principles that we can spend our whole lifetime actually trying to study and imbibe in order to emulate, follow in the footsteps of those who are actually living a fully surrendered devotional life. So then Krishna begins to speak very confusing word jugglery, karma mimamsa philosophy, to his father Nanda Maharaj, saying, why are we worshipping Indra? These rains, they're coming because of karma. Karma is actually the highest principle. Everyone gets a result of their work. And Nanda Maharaj is thinking, these are so sweet words from child Krishna. How can he understand these things? But Krishna exhibits such potency that he actually convinces Nanda Maharaj and the other coward men that actually they should direct. I'll read just a few lines from Prabhupada's Krishna book, which is very nicely explaining the nature of this sacrifice and Krishna's request. After hearing the statement by Krishna, Nanda Maharaj replied, my dear boy, since you are asking, I shall arrange for a separate sacrifice for the local Brahmins in Govardhan Hill, but for the present, let me execute this sacrifice known as Indra Yajna. But Krishna replied, my dear father, don't delay. The sacrifice you propose for Govardhan and the local Brahmins will take much time. Better take the arrangement and paraphernalia you have already made for the Indra Yajna and immediately engage them to satisfy Govardhan Hill and the local Brahmins. Nanda Maharaj finally relented. The coward men then inquired from Krishna how he wanted the yajna performed, and Krishna gave them the following directions. Prepare very nice foods of all descriptions from the grain and ghee collected for the yajna. Prepare rice, dal, then halava, pakora, puri, and all kinds of milk preparations such as sweet rice, rubbi, sweet balls, sundish, rasgulla, and ladu. And invite the learned Brahmins who can chant the Vedic hymns and offer oblations to the fire. The Brahmins should be given all kinds of grain in charity. Then decorate all the cows and feed them well. After performing this, give money and charity to the Brahmins. As far as the lower animals are concerned, such as dogs, and the lower grades of people, such as the Chandalas or the fifth class, who are considered untouchable, they may also be given sumptuous prasad. After nice grasses have been given to the cows, the sacrifice is known as Govardhan Puja may immediately begin. This sacrifice will very much satisfy me. So Krishna instructs that actually you should worship Govardhan Hill. And this is a nice point. Prabhupada mentions the sacrifice known as Govardhan Puja is observed in the Krishna consciousness movement. Lord Chaitanya has recommended that since Krishna is worshipable, so his land, Vrindavan, and Govardhan Hill is also worshipable. To confirm this statement, Lord Krishna said that Govardhan Puja is as good as worship of him. From that day, Govardhan Puja has been going on and is known as Anakut. In all the temples of Vrindavan or outside Vrindavan, huge quantities of food are prepared in the ceremony and are very sumptuously distributed to the general population. Sometimes the food is thrown to the crowds and they enjoy collecting it off the ground. From this we can understand that prasadam offered to Krishna never becomes polluted or contaminated, even if it is thrown on the ground. The people therefore collect and eat it with great satisfaction. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna advised the coward men to stop the Indra Yajna and begin Govardhan Puja in order to chastise Indra, who was very much puffed up at being the supreme controller of the heavenly planets. The honest and simple cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, accepted Krishna's proposal and executed in detail everything he advised. They performed Govardhan worship and circumambulation of the hill. According to the instruction of Lord Krishna, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men called in learned Brahmins and began to worship Govardhan Hill by chanting Vedic hymns and offering prasad. The inhabitants of Vrindavan assembled together, decorated their cows, and gave them grass. Keeping their cows in front, they began to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. The gopis dressed themselves very luxuriantly and sat in bull-driven carts chanting the glories of Krishna's pastimes. The Brahmins assembled there to act as priests for Govardhan Puja offered their blessings to the cowherd men and their wives, the gopis. When everything was complete, Krishna assumed a great transcendental form and declared to the inhabitants of Vrindavan that he was himself Govardhan Hill, in order to convince the devotees that Govardhan Hill and Krishna himself are identical. So this is further described that Govardhan Hill mountain was there and they were collecting all of these foods and doing all of this beautiful yoga and worship and sacrifice. And then Krishna, although he was standing there, and Krishna was actually worshiping himself as Govardhan Hill, he has simultaneously assumed a form on top of Govardhan Hill, a great form on top of Govardhan Hill. So the residents of Vrindavan saw that Krishna was there, but he's also, so they're realizing, oh, Krishna is both. And then Krishna honored all of their offerings. Then Krishna began to eat all of the food offered there. The identity of Krishna in Govardhan Hill is still honored, and great devotees take rocks from Govardhan Hill and worship them exactly as they worship the deity of Krishna in the temples. The followers of the Krishna conscious movement may therefore collect small rocks or pebbles from Govardhan Hill and worship them at home, because this worship is as good as deity worship. The form of Krishna who began to eat the offerings was separately constituted, and Krishna himself, along with the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, offered obeisances to the deity as well as Govardhan Hill. In offering obeisances to the huge form of Krishna in Govardhan Hill, Krishna declared, "Just see how Govardhan Hill has assumed this huge form and is favoring us by accepting all these offerings." Krishna also declared, "One who neglects the worship of Govardhan Puja, as I am personally conducting it, will not be happy. There are many snakes on Govardhan Hill, and persons neglecting the prescribed duty of Govardhan Puja will be bitten by these snakes and killed. In order to assure the good fortune of the cows and themselves, all people of Vrindavan near Govardhan must worship the hill, as prescribed by me." Thus performing the Govardhan Puja, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan followed the instructions of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, and afterwards they returned to their respective homes. And then, from that beautiful sacrifice, then they heard the patter of rain. Then Indra became upset, and Indra began to create a very furious storm, and he actually attempted to kill the residents of Vrindavan, which was we can't imagine what type of offense that is, to try to kill Krishna and all of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So Krishna performs his most beautiful and touching and a very memorable pastime, where this gigantic rainfall, columns of rain and ice are coming down, and Krishna tells his most dear devotees, "Don't be afraid," and he divinely lifts up Govardhan Hill, and all of the inhabitants huddle together underneath. At first they weren't sure, but they kind of crawl through, and then they see there's so much space there, and it becomes like a beautiful transcendental arena, and they see this divine vision at Krishna. Krishna simultaneously performs many things, as you said, and one thing Krishna wanted to do was give all of his inhabitants the opportunity to just be with him for 7 days, for continuously. Because in Krishna's normal pastimes, it's always separation and union, that ebb and flow of that intense ecstasy, and then that extremely transcendentally painful separation from Krishna when he goes out to the forest. But here he wanted to allow all of the inhabitants around at the same time to get satisfaction by being with Krishna, by seeing him. So for 7 days, all of the inhabitants together, they totally absorbed just taking Krishna's darshan. And Krishna himself was entranced seeing all the faces of his own devotees. So Krishna's activities simultaneously bring pleasure to the devotees, and Krishna gets immense satisfaction by their own love. So this is a little background. I know you all have most likely heard this pastime, of course, but every festival is an opportunity to go a little deeper, to increase our knowledge or devotion for Govardhan, and we can reflect the privileged position of these Brajabasis. They have, in one sense, rejected the idea of trying to become one with Krishna, trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. They are exclusively devoted to him. Therefore, they are able to relish the unlimited satisfaction of the soul. And on the other hand, in the material world, those who have foolishly turned away from Krishna and are therefore undergoing a bitter experience in samsara, the illusion of material identification, material consciousness, being afflicted, the heart burning with negative, you know, demoniac qualities. The soul never finds satisfaction, right? His thirst never gets quenched. It's described like a blazing fire, the cycle of samsara. And Prabhupada is indicating here the key for prosperity and peace in society is for people to follow spiritual principles, both men and women. When they take up sadhana bhakti, very rapidly purification begins, and these negative qualities are rooted out, dependent on the quality and the intensity of one's shravanam and kirtanam, hearing and chanting about Krishna. So sometimes we get so busy, we have so many practical activities, but we don't want to be in the Krishna conscious movement and not think of Krishna. That is maya, for sure. So we have to take advantage as much as possible whenever we can. Krishna gives that opportunity. Today is one such day. So I thank you very much for your kind attention. I apologize, I didn't have too much to share. Just a few recollections of this beautiful festival, and I'm sure you all have your own appreciations. So we'll see if there's any comments or contributions. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for your class once again. A wonderful class again, and you made a lot of nice points. Too many to comment on. We could discuss maybe afterwards. But one point you were mentioning is, you said something to the extent of any position without devotional service is inauspicious. And you also mentioned dancing doll. Well, I just kind of want to appreciate one verse that one of my favorite ones, and maybe you could elaborate on it a little bit. It says, this is from the fifth canto, chapter 1, verse 17. It's one of my favorite verses because it's very clever. It says that essentially, even if one is a monk traveling from forest to forest, he must always fear material bondage because he is married to six kowais, the mind and five senses. Mm-hmm. And even if a person is married, if he's divorced from Maya, then he's always Atmaram, self-satisfied. And this reminds me of the pastime Durvasa Ambarish, because even though externally Durvasa wasn't married, he was married to his false ego, therefore he tried to kill Ambarish. So and it also reminded me of a pastime I was mentioning to devotees yesterday in Srila Prabhupada Leelamrita, the chapter entitled India Unifying ISKCON. In that chapter specifically mentions where the sannyasi were looking down towards the householders and saying they can't be leaders. And in that one of the, in that pastime, Prabhupada, like you were mentioning, you know, if you become proud, then the Lord or the spiritual master chastise you. And in this chapter, Prabhupada chastised one of the sannyasi. He kept on emphasizing that sannyasis are superior to householders. So Prabhupada told this sannyasi, he said, just because no woman wanted to marry you, you say that no one should get married, and he was embarrassed. So can you exactly explain? That was embarrassing, right? Can you explain exactly, like, we're not saved just because we're, you know, single, like Jitendra is saying we're single, but we could see that even if you're single, you're still a dancing dog in the hands of Maya, you know? So maybe you could explain some more pastimes about that. I just appreciated those verses from Bhagavatam and that pastime, so.
Yeah, actually in our society, there's not so much difference between brahmacharya and grihastha, because established, the standard that Prabhupada set, it's not that the grihasthas are doing illicit, right? They may have one or two children, but really it's not, so they're grihastha brahmacharis. So yes, we understand it's not that just by one being in a renounced position that they become Krishna conscious. But one point is that by reducing association with the opposite sex or the objects of attachment or attraction, then one does become, they're able to focus, they're able to generally become more strong. So whether it happens in a brahmacharya ashram or even in the grihastha ashram. Grihastha ashram doesn't mean that now we just hang out and just enjoy and just let our senses go. No, actually, even as a grihastha, there's training that everything has to be properly directed and carefully. In traditional Vedic culture, there'd be separate quarters, you know, because the Vedic rishis understand there's immediately a loosening or a slackening when there's mixing. But there is no shastric reference that just by becoming, actually, real renunciation is a very high standard. A lot of us are not even close to what a real renunciant this life is like. We read about the devotees in Gaur Lila, the real standard. So one's position in a varnashram does not have a bearing on one's devotional competency. It is meant to help facilitate, but in any ashram, the key is, how much can I engage in the service of my spiritual master? And to that degree, one determines what ashram is most favorable. And that's a little bit on what you were mentioning. Any other comments or questions? Or if Shri Guru Mataji would like to mention anything? Yeah.
Appreciate your point about Govardhan Hill, and the pastime of Govardhan Hill. Specifically, I've never heard before it explained, like, taking soul shelter of Krishna, not having to worship any demigods, but even specifically, even more so, you mentioned just taking shelter of material energy in general, or looking, trying to fix things materially instead of just simply taking shelter of Krishna. It's a really nice point. I was wondering, like, what the difference is between like engaging in your duty for Krishna or taking shelter in, like, a material duty.
Taking shelter of material duty? Can you be any more clear?
We're taking care of our bodies and things for our service for Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, we're still taking shelter, like, as a grihastha, you may not live in the temple and things like that. Even if you're living in the temple, you have to do some duty to maintain your body that's not directly hearing and chanting Bhava Krishna. But let's say, like, grihastha ashram, you work, you have a specific occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but there's a subtle difference between, like, taking shelter of that and then rather than taking shelter of Krishna. You see what I'm saying?
A little bit. There's a difference between taking shelter of that You mean in sense of like, this is where I'm finding happiness?
I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on like the difference between that.
Okay. It's actually very unfortunate in Kali Yuga, the working situation. In a general Vaishnava culture, one wouldn't have to go and spend 8 hours a day with materialistic people just to maintain themselves. Right? There should be a community, devotional community, specifically simple living like this, we can maximize, because life is short. We want to utilize, we don't want to waste any time. So, you know, it's unfortunate in our society that devotees have to do that to maintain themselves. For them, very careful guidance and sadhana planning allows them to function, even though having to do a duty, but not allowing that to seriously compromise their spiritual life. Or by having a strong sadhana and endeavoring extra because of that involvement, where they can maintain, you know, Krishna consciousness even in an unfavorable atmosphere. So in that sense, one does not take shelter of that material energy, even though they are engaged, they're in the world. But if they're very steady and they're fixed, and actually they're living a very austere and devotional life, then they can actually transcend that material influence. That's a high platform. That's not easy. Generally, it's difficult. And taking shelter of Krishna, you're saying on one hand, taking shelter of one's material duty. So it's difficult, from what I understand, that it's difficult to be Krishna conscious in the workplace. Prabhupada wanted that we establish communities so that devotees don't have to do that so much. Non-devotee association is a very difficult situation. And I think sometimes we don't realize actually that, and we can very much be weakened if we're not cautious or on guard or have very strong spiritual sadhana. So one may be in that, but they don't want to take shelter of their duty in terms of actually feeling satisfied, you know, that this is, we don't want to take satisfaction, find anywhere except in Krishna, except in our relationship with Krishna, except in devotional service. So the relationships or the environment, we don't want to seek happiness there. Actually, we want to seek happiness in the devotee association, in the service of the Lord, the deity, the devotees. That takes a very conscientious effort, and that's difficult, from what I understand. So the majority of people will be in that position, that they will be grihasthas. So there's a lot of energy in our movement in terms of finding those situations to make better situations for devotees. And those who don't have to be in that situation can be very grateful for whatever reason, just because of our age or our position. We're not in that realm now or yet. And so we can take full advantage and try to fortify ourselves through the message of Bhagavatam, that whenever we have to go out in the world or anything like that, then we can seek shelter of Krishna, which requires one-pointedness. It requires a firm dedication. Generally, the grihasthas, although they have to be in that atmosphere, they purify themselves through giving charity. They have to work very hard, but when they give the fruits of that to Vaishnavas, to Brahmins, to those in the renounced order, then they get a lot of mercy, and all of their hard work, it becomes, you know, mitigated to one extent. And that's the Vedic injunction, that by giving the charity, then it purifies the ashram and everything. And then there's inviting sadhus to the home and actually making one's home a temple, conducting programs there. So these are the means by which they take shelter of Krishna, even in that situation. Anyone else can share if they like on this point. I'm not so expert. Okay. You want to share something? Okay. Thank you.
Oh, this topic about grihasthas and brahmacharis just started. And it's like grihastha ashram is also difficult, but at the same time, it's when it's done properly, it's a great opportunity to show the world how like you can live, maintain your family, at the same time devote everything to God. Mm-hmm. Because like in general world, they're very, like, it's very hard, especially in Kali Yuga, to become sannyasi. So actually devotee is one of their important role is to show the example. Because like if only brahmacharis or sannyasis would practice devotional service, then it will be very hard to find a room for regular people. Then they will think, I cannot become devotee of God. Mm-hmm. But Krishna is saying, whatever you do or eat or give away, do it as an offering to me. So one of the roles of devotee is to show regular people how to, whatever you do, just offer to Krishna, and how not to consider your children as your children but as gifts of Krishna, and how to direct them in a devotional mood. It's very difficult to find the balance. But if devotees will be able to find that balance, then many people could join. Like, if devotees will be able to show how to, like, balance life, health, spirituality, like everything, then really many people would be able to join.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Okay, I think we'll stop here. We have some nice festivities today. The program tonight will begin at 6:00. Thank you all so very much for your kind attention, and I ask your forgiveness and blessings that anything I said, you will forgive me and be merciful. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. What's up? Step it up.